The following is a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.
Well, hi there, everybody. I'm Sean Wood, and welcome to the Sprint Car Show for Tuesday, May the 8th. On today's broadcast, we'll talk with female sprint car racer Bree Hershey, who picked up her first career win last Saturday night, and we'll talk with World of Outlaws second place points man Donnie Schatz. That's all coming up next here on the Sprint Car Show, brought to you by Rod and Supply. They don't just sell them, they raise them. By Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions, and the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway.
At Rod and Supply, they have the unique opportunity to be involved with all sorts of auto racing and performance-related industries, including farming equipment. Whether you're running a go-kart, micro sprint, midget, modified, late model, sprint car, or a tractor, Rod End Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performing at your maximum potential. Since 1989, Rod End Supply has provided superior products priced competitively with prompt and courteous service. Their promise is to continue to provide superior service with superior products that will keep you in front of your field. To learn more, log on to rodandsupply.com or call Bob Douglas and his staff at 1-800-284-2902. That's 1-800-284-2902. Rod and Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them.
Hi, this is Jessica Zemkin. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. And we're pleased to welcome in this young lady who won for the very first time in her career in the 358 Sprint Car from Dillsburg, Pennsylvania, Bree Hershey. Bree, always a pleasure to speak with you, and welcome to the Sprint Car Show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you.
Well, congratulations on your first ever win. Now, you've been racing since you were 5 years old, and as we talked a moment ago just before we came on the air, you still sound a little giddy, but that's okay to say that because it's meant in a neat way. You still sound like you're still celebrating that first ever win. What was your night like at Lincoln Speedway on Saturday evening?
Well, it was... I'd almost say it was like a perfect night because we went in to the heat race and led every lap and won the heat. We started outside the front row, and Dad's like, well, I guess you get a new tire for this one because that usually doesn't happen. And then I got the lead going into turn one and I just stayed calm the whole race. Never really crossed my mind that, oh, I might win this, but every lap, just everything seemed to be happening in slow motion. And then I remember coming off of turn four and seeing the checker flag. I was like, wait, did that really just happen?
You know, it has to be interesting how you have to hold your emotions in check because, as I understand, there were a number of cautions. So, you know, there are times when there are going to be guys, you know, right behind you challenging you for that lead. At what point in the race, as the race wore on, if at any, did you start to feel any emotion starting to well up inside of you? Or did it, as you just said, did you not realize until that checkered flag fell that you had done what you had set out to do, and that was to win a sprint car feature?
It really wasn't until I actually saw the flag coming off of turn four. I mean, it just seemed so calm the whole race. I'm like up on edge and you're like in traffic, but being out in front and just having open track in front of you, it just kept me so calm the whole race.
From the little bit that I know of you, you seem like a very calm, very cool, collective, almost an Iceman type of personality on the inner side of you in the race car. Is that a pretty good assessment as to what your driving style is like?
Yeah, I would say so. I try to not be non-aggressive, but try to go through a more thought process. But usually when you're out there, everything just kind of goes blank in my mind, and it just kind of happens. So.
Now, I have to relate because you had said just a moment ago that it seemed as though everything was going in slow motion, And I bring this point up as we're doing this taped interview on Monday, May 7th. It was 35 years ago to the day that Janet Guthrie set fast time during practice at the Indianapolis 500. Of course, she became the first woman to race in the Indy 500. And when I had my ride-along last year with Al Unser Jr. on the big track in the two-seater, that's what I was doing. It seemed like everything was going in slow motion, even though we're doing 180 miles an hour down the backstretch. It seemed like that. So as a driver, how do you condition yourself over the years to make things go in slow motion so that you can focus on what is happening, say, two and three cars ahead of you to plan your next move, particularly on a tight bull ring like Lincoln?
I guess it's kind of a learned ability. I know every time I get in the car, sometimes I can get so anxious. I just be like, okay, you just need to calm down. And as soon as I push off, everything just seems to go into, like, normal pace for a race. I was fortunate enough to get to work with Dr. Jacques Dallaire through Lynn St. James Driver Development Program, and he really worked with us about how to focus, like, get in that mental zone, and when you get out of your mental zone, how to bring yourself back into that. And that was another way that really helped me for fast-paced racing as far as, like, Lincoln goes.
Well, I was going to ask you about Lynn St. James. Back in 2008, you were awarded a scholarship through them to attend the Women in Winner's Circle. Now I believe it's a Women in Racing Foundation is the new name. But the fact that you were selected is quite an accomplishment. What all did you take out of working with Lynn St. James and other people who were there that has enabled you to better yourself as a driver from that point to where you are today?
I'd say one of the biggest things I walked away with would be the support system, because you meet girls that race in all different divisions all over the country. And of course, you meet Lynn. You get to interact with her over, for me, it was over a two-year span. I was, like, in contact with her, I'd say, like, at least monthly. So now whenever, like, I run into some kind of difficulty, I know I can always send an email off to Lynn or any of her helpers or any other girls I met. And that was probably one of the greatest assets that I got to walk away from that with.
Would any of the girls that you met with during your class time out there, would any of the fans recognize some of the names that you were that you associated with while you were out there?
Let's see. A lot of the girls, they race out towards California, but Natalie Sather was one of the girls. She used to race ASCS. I think she's in the NASCAR Wheeling Series now. Another girl would be Amanda Ferguson. She raced sprint cars in Florida, and she as well is now into some kind of pavement racing. And then, of course, we had Sarah Fisher, who came in and talked to all of us. So it was a great bunch of girls that I got to meet.
Well, Sarah is a great person, and having covered the IndyCar Series for a while now, she's always a great person to talk with. And, of course, last year, her team with Ed Carpenter picking up that win at Kentucky was a great thing for open-wheel racing. We're talking with Bree Hershey out of Dillsburg, Pennsylvania. She is currently a student at Pennsylvania State University at Harrisburg, working on her mechanical engineering degree, and she scored her first ever win on Saturday night at the ripe young age of 20. Bree was born in 91. That meant I was 6 years out of high school, kiddo. If that makes you feel any younger. Now, you're 14th in points at Lincoln, 16th in points at Williams Grove up until Saturday night. How was 2012 going for Bree Hershey? Did I say 2010? Did I?
I think it's 12.
What year is this?
I think it's 12, right?
I think it's 12. Boy, hey, getting old is not fun.
No.
So let me try that one more time. 2012 up to before Saturday night. Talk a little bit about how both seasons were going for you at Lincoln and at Williams Grove.
Well, it definitely got off to a good start. Won my first heat race out at Lincoln, the first race of the year, but then got into a little bit of an incident and had a DNF, and the rest of the season up till Saturday is kind of like that. Had a few consy wins, but then just got tangled up and stuff other week. So no major accomplishments happened, but I couldn't say it was the worst season we had up until Saturday. But then luckily that turned around.
And how about Williams Grove? 16th in the points. How's the season been at Williams Grove this year?
It's been all right. We had motor troubles, I think, two of the nights, but we got that figured out and then got running. And then once these rainouts decide to be over, hopefully we'll have some good top 10 finishes there as well.
Well, you know, when you look at it, you're really not that far out of the top 10 in the point standings, and we're only a quarter of the way into the season. Realistically, do you think you have a shot at either track of making it into the top 10 before the season is out? Is that something that you want to shoot for?
I definitely think it's a possibility. It's not something that I like to focus on because then it's just one more thing that's bugging in the back of my mind. I kind of like to maybe not look at it 1 week, then come back and be like, oh, wow, I moved up two spots, or, oh, dang it, I need to step things up because I'm going the wrong way in points. But I definitely think it's a possibility to end up in the top 10, hopefully soon, but before the end of the year.
You know, folks, it's always interesting to hear drivers have that kind of reaction because they never worry about the points. It's that they turn it around and go, see, you guys in the media, that's what you guys talk about. It's the points here, the points there, and then you find out that a lot of drivers really don't point race. They race from race to race, and they're there to do what every driver wants to do, and that is win every time that they go out. Let's go back to Saturday night for just a moment. As you mentioned, you won your heat race. Did you have a feeling with the heat race win? Anything that possibly, hey, this is a night I could win, or did you just feel that maybe this is just part of continuing to try to get your season to the point where you want to have it at?
I must say I almost had a feeling because that race just felt so perfect. Like I felt in that heat race, like I was the only car out there. Just each lap just concentrated more on what I need to do the next lap, how the track is changing, and how I'm going to race the feature is really what was going through my mind. And then also tonight it just seemed kind of like relaxed. I wasn't really nervous because usually when I'm starting up front in a feature, I get really nervous, but it just seemed calm all night.
Yeah, and see, I can't understand that because, like I said, from what I know of you, you just don't seem like that type of a person. You seem like a very calm person on the inside, and you have to have that when you're out there battling with 24 other competitors. Take me back to your early days. Quarter midgets, you started when you were in five, then you moved up to the micros, both the 270s and the 600s. As we are in now, approaching that 35th anniversary of Janet Guthrie breaking the barrier for women at Indianapolis, what was it like back in the day to be a girl, running the quarter midgets and running the 270s, even before you were a teenager? Did you did the guys ever give you a hard time at all, or did they accept you as just one of the racers that were out there?
Well, back in quarter midgets, luckily there was quite a few girls, so we were kind of, all of us being kids, were kind of like, oh, okay, like, of course girls race. Nobody ever thought about it any differently. So I was never treated badly then. Moved into micros. Still some girls, but not as many as were in quarter midgets. And once again, there probably were people that had their opinions, but nothing ever that was said to my face. And that's continued till now. I'm treated great in 358s. I've never had anyone ever make any comments about girls and racing or anything. So I'm very fortunate to have that experience throughout my career.
And when you think about it, there's just yourself and Amy Ott that are running the 358s in central Pennsylvania at the Grove and Lincoln. Jessica Anderson running the 358 at Sealands Grove. And, of course, Nicole Bauer is running up in the 410. So there's just a handful of you ladies around that are racing and doing well. Any thoughts as to if and when somewhere down the road you might jump into a 410, or do you see the mechanical engineer side of your degree taking over, and what could that do for you, if anything, in racing as you progress on, a couple more years down the road before you graduate?
Well, long-term goal is definitely to end up into 410. And I guess to say racing is the reason that I got into mechanical engineering. So definitely don't see that overtaking racing. Hopefully it can work simultaneously. But with my degree, I was planning on working with car safety in your average motor vehicle on the road. And I got into that idea from racing. So hopefully that will help me get into 410 instead of taking over as being so career focused in my degree rather than racing.
Well, that's pretty interesting. You were telling me that you had some thoughts about maybe going out of state for your degree. What brought that about, and why did you decide to stay in state?
Well, it actually came about when I was at a Women in the Winter Circle luncheon in Indianapolis, and IUPUI out of Indiana, they were there representing the school, and they actually have a program for motorsports engineering. And I was like, that was the first I ever heard of such a thing. And I just realized, like, oh, that's exactly what I want to do. I want to be in a good field, yet still be part of racing. But the more I thought about it, it would just be so difficult to race and go to school at the same time if I were out there. So I ended up staying here, going to Penn State Harrisburg, where I'm still doing mechanical engineering. And I'm now, I still get to race, and I have all my family, my crew, and my sponsors still here with me.
Yeah, and then they don't have wings out there.
No, a little different.
That's a bad word out there in Indiana.
Yes, it is.
That'd be like saying, take the wings off here. I just didn't say that, but I did. You know, I mean, yeah. I get that deer in the headlight look. And you have to understand, you know, as a reporter, when you go and you talk to different drivers, you just want to find out who might be deciding to take the wing off and go run with USAC when the Eastern Storm rolls in later next or early part of June. Yeah, I got a few deer in a headlight looks like, did you seriously just ask that question? Now, you have run a non-wing race, correct?
Yes, in micros. We tried it out. It wasn't actually a race, but we took the wings off for a little bit. And, of course, I don't know if you want to count this, but all quarter midgets were non-wings.
Yeah, well.
I don't think that counts.
No, not really, but still, that's where you have to start. Did you notice a difference going back to that micro day? Did you notice a lot of a big difference in the way the characteristics of the car handled?
Yes, you definitely have to be, like, on your toes more. You can't just throw it into a turn like you could with the wing on because there's nothing there to hold it down.
Yeah, that's true. That if you get and I think what's really is attractive about non-wing racing, when you think about it, the laws of physics, because you are basically, you know, there's a, you know, the limit is how far can you push it without actually going over the threshold, and that's what non-wing sprint car racing is. How far can you push that car, particularly on that right rear, to get through the corners without it turning to the right and then starting to bicycle, and the next thing you know, you're snap barrel rolling it down the backstretch.
Yeah,
which I'm sure mom would not be too thrilled about seeing that with her little girl going barrel rolling down the backstretch.
I don't think she'd like that.
What your dad had raced before. Mm-hmm. Tell me, what was the celebration like in Victory Lane on Saturday night?
It was crazy because I had all these memories coming back from the last time he won there, and I was still in corner midgets at that time, and it was just like standing there with dad, getting the pictures taken, but it was like a role reversal. And then looking up, and I just remember rolling into Victory Lane and seeing all the fans and all the kids just lined up against the fence, and that's like when it really hit me. I was like, these people are all still here, like they stayed for the 58 race, and they're still down here at the fence, and it was just like the most amazing moment so far, I must say.
Yeah, that's one of those priceless moments that you can't put a tag on, and a lot of the people outside of our industry maybe not understanding, just, you know, you'll 50 years from now, you'll still be remembering that day. You'll still, you know, remember the looks in the faces, and then, you know, the picture taking and the interview and the crowd and the cheers, and it's definitely something to cherish for a lifetime. Well, Bree, listen, we want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule here with school wrapping up to chat with us here on the Sprint Car Show. And again, congratulations on getting that first ever win. Hopefully it's a sign of things to come. And we want to wish you and the team the best of luck for the remainder of the 2012, I got it right this time, season.
Well, thank you very much. It was nice talking to you.
Thanks so much for joining us. Bree Hershey, the second female ever to win at the Lincoln Speedway. This time she picked it up in the 358 division on Saturday night. And we're going to take a short break and be back with more of the Sprint Car Show right here on the Dirt Track Channel right after this.
The world leader in suspension technology, Penske Racing Shocks has been providing custom-built, high-performance shock absorbers to all forms of racing for over 20 years. Offering only the highest quality suspension products, shocks are available in non, single, double, triple, and four-way adjustable configurations. All Penske Racing Shocks are hand-built, tailored to meet a driver's feel or car setup, and dyno-tested, ensuring the highest attention is paid to detail, consistency, and performance. For your short track needs, contact Dave Reedy at Penske Shocks at 610-375-6180. That's 610-375-6180. Penske Racing Shocks are available direct from the manufacturer or through many dealers worldwide. Visit them on the web at www.penskeshocks.com. Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions.
Hi, this is Justin Henderson, driver of the number 35 Sorocatch Motorsports Sprint Car. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. Well, it is the month of May, and if it is the month of May, that means World of Outlaws are heading to Pennsylvania for their first round matchup against the Pennsylvania Posse. And the guy who knows how to get the job done and winning against the Pennsylvania Posse, a driver who really likes coming to Pennsylvania nowadays, is currently sitting second in the World of Outlaw points, the four-time World of Outlaws champion from Fargo, North Dakota, driver for the Tony Stewart Racing Team, Donnie Schatz. Donnie, always a pleasure to speak with you. Welcome to the Sprint Car Show.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's always great to chat with you. As we mentioned, you love coming to this place, but you're going to shoot me for this because we were talking about this before we came on the air. July 19th, 2008, the last time you won at Williams Grove Speedway. And as of late, it's been sort of a little bit of a Pennsylvania domination. What's happened? Why haven't you been back to Victory Lane for a while in Williams Grove?
Well, we just haven't been good enough to get to Victory Lane. You know, we've been close, but, you know, we fight the same problem we do at other places. The bigger tracks are, we've slipped a little bit in the engine department, and I think a lot of other people have caught up there. But, you know, it's... you know, can't hang your head at it. It's a place that some guys never get the opportunity to win at, and we've been very fortunate enough to win a lot of races there. So, you know, it doesn't feel so bad being there since 08, but yet it does, you know, for karma and all that, we really want to get ourselves back in Victory Lane there and get one for the Outlaws. So look forward to getting there, and hopefully we can get the job done.
Of course, back in 07, you spanked the Pennsylvania Posse people pretty good. Five out of the six races you were in Victory Lane in 2007. And I remember a conversation you and I had some time ago. I guess in the early days, it was a little tough coming in. I mean, you know, it is Pennsylvania. The guys, as everybody knows, probably the toughest weekly sprint car competitors in the country. But you have fallen in love and enjoy coming to the place. What turned things around to make you really enjoy coming and racing at Williams Grove Speedway?
Well, you know, when I first started coming out there, you heard all the hype about what it was. It was a big paperclip style racetrack, and all the speed and the local competitors were tough. But I was too naive and too young to even be able to look at anyone else that was even there. And you know, when I went there, I just did not have a very good combination. I didn't have confidence as a driver. I hated the way the racetrack was, and I think if I remember back at it, my explanation was they should fill the place up with water and test bath boats. And you know, that's it's something that you can't carry that attitude towards a racetrack. Anytime you go to a place that you absolutely hate, you're gonna run bad. You're gonna, you know, not do well. Your expectations are gonna be not big, and in order to get over all them things, I had to, you know, grow to love the place, and not only you know, just the racing, but, you know, I've got to be very good friends with a lot of the people around there, and probably have some of my funnest times of the year when we do go out there. So, you know, it's kind of become full circle for me and changed, and I enjoy the racing, I enjoy the fans, I enjoy the, you know, the entertainment and the off-track activities that are out there. We get to see a lot of our friends from Bass Pro Shops and Harrisburg and all them things. So, you know, it's just become everything we do when we come out there is fun, so you can't help but, you know, really fall in love with the place.
Is the hype still as much as it was back in the day, Posse versus the Outlaws?
Well, I think it's something that the fans more, you know, get into probably more than anything. You know, it's not like we change anything when we come to Pennsylvania. We don't all of a sudden say, oh, we got to have our A game on now. You know, we bring our A game to the races every day, irregardless whether it's in Pennsylvania, California, Washington, no matter where it's at. So, you know, they just do happen to have a lot of great racers out there. There's a lot of history and a lot of heritage and a lot of great guys and a lot of great car owners there. So it's something that, you know, that's, you know, them guys' expectations probably rise to the occasion quite a bit more when you're there. But, you know, it's a very unique situation, and just glad to be a part of it.
Speaking of unique situations, you are a five-time Knoxville Nationals champion. Of course, last year coming from a 13th to score the win. I've heard that Knoxville is also another track that takes a while to get used to. It takes a while to get used to the aerodynamics with the wings because of the speeds. What I'm wondering is there a way you can compare what it was like for yourself to try to gain a hold on reading both Williams Grove and Knoxville and understanding the science that goes behind each track? And what are some of the differences that you have to approach each track with in terms of preparation engine-wise in order to attain the success you have over the years at both facilities?
Well, it does. You know, there's some characteristics there. I mean, when Williams Grove is like feature time, you know, when the track slowed down a couple seconds, 18 to 19 second laps, it's very much like Knoxville, the way you attack it and the way you drive it. You know, it's just it's not something you can explain. It's just a feel that you acquire when you understand. You know, my cars aren't typically as good when the track is in the 14 second bracket or the 15 second bracket, but I don't seem to, as the race goes on and when the track slows down, my car doesn't seem to slow down. So, you know, it's just something that you acquire that feel, and you know how hard to push and not overdo your tires and not burn everything up the first five or six laps, and, you know, try to be as consistent and make as good laps as you can without slipping the tires at all. And, you know, that's something you have to do at both places. You know, as far as engine-wise, you know, we really don't build engines specifically for one particular place. And, you know, if you got an engine that runs good at Williams Grove, it's probably going to run pretty good everywhere. And, you know, it probably run really good at Knoxville. But all of our stuff is, you know, pretty well built the same. I mean, we've been able to win both places with several different motors. So it's not like it's, you know, you got to have the magic motor or the magic combination. And, you know, that's one thing you do see out there. The guys are really up on their engine stuff, and they stay very focused and on top of it. And, you know, their stuff runs very good no matter where they go. So they work hard out there to do that.
We're talking with Donnie Schatz, currently second in the point standings in the World of Outlaws, 11 behind Sammy Swindell, as the Outlaws get ready for their first invasion of the year, which will actually take place on Wednesday evening at the Lincoln Speedway, a 410 mile bull ring. And we'll talk about that in a second. I wanted to go back, Donnie, just for a moment. You mentioned about tires. This is the third year now that Goodyear has been here in central Pennsylvania. And one of the things that I just started hearing recently from a number of drivers, and it's not a large number, you know, just a handful or so, the left rear, for some unknown reason, is growing during the feature, and they're coming in with stagger that's larger than what they had wanted to go out with. Let's just say, for example, they went out with a 15-inch stagger, and they come back in with almost a 17-inch stagger. Have you noticed anything of that in your races with the left rear and the Goodyear tire and the stagger growing at the end of the feature.
Yeah, it's something that, you know, not every tire is going to be built the same. And, you know, when you build a sprint car tire, there's virtually no structure to it whatsoever. So for them things to be consistent, you know, you're going to have stagger change. I haven't physically seen or heard of anybody growing as much as 2 inches of stagger for the feature. And I would assume that the guys that probably say it are guys that are real heavy on the gas pedal and spin the tires real hard. And, you know, that's just speculation, but we really haven't seen any of that ourselves. But, you know, our guys spend a lot of time, you know, balancing and checking tires to make sure that, you know, they do got the best new tire that they can have on there and, you know, provide the best thing they can. So it's, you know, it's not something we see every day, but I guess, you know, it doesn't say that the batches of tires they're getting aren't the same ones we're getting either. So it's, you know, Goodyear is a large manufacturer and they obviously make a lot of tires. So it's pretty common to have something, you know, a little bit off every once in a while.
And that's very true and a very good point, but it is different to hear a stagger increasing during a feature. And I guess that does drive a crew chief a little bit nuts after a while. And maybe it was just a different batch of tires. We'll have to wait and see. Speaking of coming into Lincoln Speedway, first time in 14 years that the Outlaws have been back at the Pigeon Hills track. What are you looking forward to about coming into the 410 Mile Bull Ring down there in Abbottstown?
Well, I haven't, you know, we haven't been there for several years, and I know, you know, they got a great fan following. They got a great car count. You know, we get to race more than just at Williams Grove, which is really neat. I mean, we all miss going to Grandview and Port Royal and all the places around there when it kind of was like Speed Week when we went out there. So, you know, it's we're looking forward to that. I guess, you know, the only thing you hear is you know, a lot of the competitors are grumbling about the P2P payoff that the World of Outlaws has put forth for that event. But, you know, that's something that's over and above our control. So, you know, we just have to deal with it and move on. And just, you know, we're all looking forward to getting there, obviously. And hopefully we can have the best, you know, the best scenario out of it and try to get out of there with a win. That would be really good for the Outlaws.
And yeah, you're right. It is a shame we don't see you at tracks like Port Royal and, of course, Grandview. what a great little sprint car track that is. You blink, you're in trouble in a hurry. And so hopefully one of these days we can get you guys back to Grandview Speedway. The season so far, three wins, and you and Sammy Swindell not only swapping leads on the track and wins on the track, you guys are swapping the points back and forth. Can you recall a time over the last few years where there's been this much of lead changes atop the point standings this early in the season?
Well, that's hard to remember back, you know, to last week even. So to go back, it's not something I distinctly remember. I'm sure it's probably happened. You know, it's very easy to have it go either way this early in the year. And, you know, it seems like when we win, you know, we get the points. And then Sam's been running very good too. So, you know, we're not running to our capability yet, which is what makes me feel real good. You know, we're right in the hunt, and it's way too early to be focusing on points. But you kind of have to take an average stance on it and just see where you're at. And you know, we're quite a ways ahead of where we've been in the last 2 years, and you know, we just haven't hit our groove yet, and we're still still got improvements to do, but we haven't been real bad. So, you know, that's something that's, you know, it's character building, and it's something we're building on. We're confident that we're going to get our, you know, get our stuff going, and we're going to rattle off our wins like we generally do in the summer and get running very well. So, you know, we're just looking forward to that time, and all we can do is control what we do within our own organization and our own team, and whatever happens to, you know, the other guys is out of our control. So we look at it as it's ours to win, and you know, it's also ours to lose, so hopefully we don't do the latter.
That sounds a bit scary when you think about it, that you're not too at your potential yet. And that's scary in a good way for you guys, but for the competition, they may not want to hear that, because if you go back to 2003, you have not finished lower than eighth in the points. And when I was looking at the statistics between you and Sammy, really not much difference-wise. I think the only number that he has you at right now is quick time. Quick time he has two, and you have yet to set the quick time. So that's got to be pretty good then, Donnie. You must be feeling pretty good with the way everything is going as you roll into May and roll into Pennsylvania for the first time this year.
Yeah, we're definitely, you know, there, like I said, there's things we're going to build on, and everybody within the team is communicating very well. You know, it's pretty common and pretty easy for guys to get upset and get discouraged, but, you know, there's four of us there, and one of us is always picking everyone else up and you know, carrying the weight some days, and that's part of the game. Not everybody's going to come with a smile on every day, and if they do, it's a phony smile, and I don't believe in that. So, you know, you've got emotions, and you want to get them out there just as raw as you can, and, you know, we're working our tails off to try to be as good as we can, and I know my guys are definitely doing everything within their power, and, you know, there's only 24 hours in the day is the only thing holding us back. So, you know, we'll definitely get the groove on here, and, you know, when everybody gets motivated and gets going a little bit more, and the summer heat kicks in, it's definitely when we seem to do our best. So can't wait for summertime.
We're talking with Donnie Schatz, currently second in the point standing in the World of Outlaws as they invade Lincoln Speedway for the first time in 14 years on Wednesday night, and then the Grove for the first of their six nights of racing. That's Friday and Saturday at Williams Grove Speedway. But, of course, you guys crisscrossing across the country, you'll actually be heading back to your home track this year, first time since 2009. Tell us a little bit about the big race out there for you guys at your home track.
Yeah, we're excited to have, you know, we took over the track. This will be our third season at the Red River Valley Speedway. And for some unknown reason, we were unable to get a World of Outlaws show the last 2 years. And I guess for even funnier reason, now we were able to get one. So, you know, we're excited about that. We're, you know, my family is trying to give back to the community that's kind of helped me put the building blocks together to be where I am today. And, you know, and we don't get to run sprint cars there weekly, but we do, you know, try our best to run the most professional, you know, weekly show we can. And as the fans and all the racing supporters that we have in this area are just excited to see the World of Outlaws coming back. So can't wait till it's just right around the corner here. It's June 16th. And, you know, hopefully we can probably more than anything go to the home track and win. But, you know, more so is make sure it's a great event for the fans and everybody has a great time.
Donnie, this is your 16th year with the World of Outlaws. When you look back over the years, what were your early goals, if you had any, that you wanted to accomplish? And as you progress towards your 20th year with the World of Outlaws, what are some future goals that you have set for yourself?
Well, when I first came out here, you know, all I really wanted to do was race with the World of Outlaws, and things were a lot different then. You know, you had to prove yourself to Ted Johnson, even though it was his World of Outlaws. You wanted... Ted was a very well-respected person, and you wanted to be one of his guys, and you had to earn your right out here to get tow money, and you had to earn respect from the big guys, Steve and Sammy and Dave Blaney and all those guys, and it's something that, you know, that's what I just wanted to do. I didn't really care that if I was, you know, win a race here and there. I didn't really ever see myself expectations of winning a championship and, you know, winning the Knoxville Nationals, you dream of those things, but, you know, here I'm living the dream in what we've accomplished. And, you know, as far as going forward, you can't really say that, you can't set a limit on what it is that you want to do or win career wise. It's just, it's the competitive nature that you want to be able to grit your teeth every night when you get in the car and be the best. And that's, you know, I just want to continue that and try to be the best. So, you know, that's my goal going forward. And I think some days, you know, it's a very hard thing to do. And there's a lot of days where I scratch my head and say, why this? But, you know, every time you get to take a trophy home or stand on the front straightaway and, you know, have people cheering for you and see kids looking up to you, it's, you know, it's something that probably makes it more worthwhile than a guy can ever realize.
Or beating the posse at their home track of Williams Grove, I would guess that's a little extra motivation, right?
Well, I don't know that it's extra motivation. It's You know, we've been beat up by a lot of tracks across the country by a lot of different racers, and, you know, it's just the nature of the beast that's going to happen. You know, people have always said the Outlaws are the best, but you got to take it one day at a time, and there's guys that can beat them day in, day out, so, or beat them here. I mean, beat them here, beat them there. They don't seem to do it day in, day out, but, you know, that's the way it goes. So it'd be great to get a win in Pennsylvania for sure.
Now, over the years, the schedule has changed quite a bit from the hundreds of nights of racing down to what it is today. And now that you have a family, your thoughts on the number of races you guys race, is it good? A little bit more? A little bit less? What's your feeling?
You know, I miss the days when we used to be able to do 100 races, but, you know, it was different people doing the scheduling. And, you know, one thing that's taken a lot of them races away is promoters, you know, feeling like other races affect their race, and that's probably why you're seeing 60 races now instead of what we used to have 100. There's promoters wanting to have territories, and you know, they only want to come here, one here, there, and one, you know. And I think sprint car racing is something, when you build an event up, it's something you have to do every year. I mean, Williams Grove has built up a great event, and we come there three times a year. I mean, six of our races, nights of racing a year, are at Williams Grove, and they all seem to be successful. But that doesn't mean that a guy shouldn't, you know, have the opportunity to go to Grandview or Port Royal or, you know, the other little tracks in the area here and there, because, you know, I believe those other tracks help feed that. You know, it's something it helps promote it. But, you know, at the end of the day, the almighty dollar is, you know, in control of everything, and especially the sprint car world. So, you know, that's something that we don't get our hands on it too much of it.
That is very true. And hopefully someday it does get back to the point where there are other races here, because there are some tremendous tracks. Of course, we can't forget about your stops in Don Martin, Silver Cup out there in Lernerville. You got a neat little bull ring up in Mercer Raceway Park. You got Port Royal Speedway, Sealands Grove Speedway, Grandview, Big Diamond. Hopefully, as time goes on down the road, you can get to some other racetracks that you normally don't get to here in central Pennsylvania. Well, Donnie, it's been an exciting first quarter of the season so far, and if that's any indication of what this season is going to be like, this championship may come down to the World Finals in Charlotte, and I know we will be there covering that, and we want to wish you all the best of luck, and enjoy your trip to central Pennsylvania, and we look forward to having you back here on the Sprint Car Show in the near future, and we really look forward to sitting down and chatting with you in person out at the Knoxville Nationals during our live broadcast during the 4 days of the Nationals.
Well, I appreciate you having me. I'll see you another day.
Sure thing. Thanks very much. Donnie Schatz, second in the points in the World of Outlaws as they make their first appearance of the season in 2012 here in Pennsylvania. We'll take a break and be back with more right after this.
The National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa is the only sprint car museum in the world dedicated to promoting the future of sprint car racing and preserving the past. Located in Turn 2 of the world-famous Knoxville Raceway, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, except New Year's Day, Easter, Thanksgiving Day, and Christmas Day. Non-wing sprint cars, historic big cars, open-wheel roadsters, and wing sprinters are all on display in the museum, which also features a movie theater and the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame. Make plans now to stop by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum the next time you're in Knoxville, Iowa, or shop our museum store online at www.sprintcarstuff.com. The Hall of Fame and Museum is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time Monday through Friday, and from noon to 5 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays and Sundays.
Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show, everybody. Special thanks to our guests, Bree Hershey and Donnie Schatz, for joining us on our broadcast today. We want to take a moment and pass along our deepest sympathies to the Keene and Hodnett family. As many know, we lost Jesse Keene, a longtime sprint car owner and supporter in central Pennsylvania, on Friday, and also Greg's father passed away on Friday, so our deepest sympathies to both of those families in their time of need. A reminder, we'll be back with you again next Tuesday, May the 15th at noon right here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. Don't forget, coming up on July the 10th, it's live flag-to-flag coverage of the Lou Blaney Memorial for the 410 Sprint Cars and the Big Block Modifieds from Sharon Speedway. That's all coming up on July the 10th. And we invite you to stop by and say hello. We'll be broadcasting live all 4 days of the Knoxville Nationals, and we'll be at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. Looking forward to seeing all the fans of the Sprint Car Show out at Knoxville. And don't forget to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, everybody. I'm Sean Wood. Today's broadcast has been brought to you by Rod and Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. By Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions, and the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway.
This has been a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.